From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. The little case that could, started right here in Eugene, shocked the world. The audacity of Juliana versus the United States, a bunch of kids suing the federal government over climate change, made headlines and captured global attention. But perhaps the reality of suing the most powerful government in the world and asking it to stop relying on the fuel for all that power was a bridge too far. As such, the U.S. Supreme Court recently denied the case, and now Juliana versus the U.S. is remanded to the history books. But what about the nonprofit that started it all? Today on the show, you'll hear from the founder and lead attorney for Our Children's Trust to learn what's next for the organization. And we'll finish the show by introducing you to KLCC's new arts and culture reporter. Through multiple presidential administrations and several Congresses, Juliana versus the United States has wound its way through the legal system. And while the Supreme Court ended its journey recently, the organization's leader, who you'll hear from now, says it will fight on. Julia Olson, Chief Legal Counsel for Our Children's Trusts, thanks so much for coming on and talking with us.
Well, thanks for having me, Michael.
Yeah. I know a lot of people know the case and know the organization, but why don't you just give us sort of a primer, if you will, about the case, its origins, and where it stands today?
I founded Our Children's Trust back in 2010, right here in Eugene, Oregon. And today, almost 15 years later, we are leading a global children's climate rights really revolution across the country and across the world. And we represent young people both here in Oregon, but also in states across the US. And we work with youth and attorneys globally to sue governments to protect young people's fundamental climate rights as a human right.
Okay. Okay. Recent Supreme Court decision came down. Talk about that.
One of our landmark cases is Juliana versus the United States, which was a case based here in the District Court of Oregon. And that case just went on a 10-year journey. It was the hardest fought case by the U.S. Department of Justice in history, taking us up to the Court of Appeals numerous times and up to the Supreme Court on three different occasions. The last of which was after we lost on a procedural issue in the Ninth Circuit last summer in 2024. We petitioned the U.S. Supreme Court to grant a writ of certiorari to basically review what the Ninth Circuit had gotten wrong. And just last week, the U.S. Supreme Court, in a one-line decision, denied our request that they grant cert. So that brings the Juliana case after 10 years to a technical close in that case. But what's really important are two things here. Mm-hmm. The first is the Juliana case set tremendous precedent and really opened the door to this kind of litigation worldwide. And it really started from these 21 young people having the bravery to bring this case against the government that is most responsible for causing climate change, and that's the United States. And it took the courage of a judge here in Oregon, Judge Ann Aiken, to really look at the facts and the law of the case and say, even though this is a new factual scenario that courts haven't had the opportunity to deal with before, that she said, we can apply the Constitution to this circumstance and let's move this case forward. And it was the first court in the world to say that the right to a life-sustaining climate is a fundamental right that humans hold, including under the U.S. Constitution. So that was a game changer globally. And as the case went on, no court ever got to the merits. So what we have, and this is the second important point, is this case was dismissed without prejudice, meaning these claims will be heard. They won't be heard necessarily in the Juliana v. U.S. Named case, but they will go on to be heard. And in fact, Our Children's Trust is working on another case against the Trump administration as we speak. And lastly, you know, the youth in this case I mean, they've had enormous successes along the way, and they've accomplished so much, and they should be so proud of everything they've accomplished. And there is an opportunity for them to take the Giuliani case to an international judicial body for review. And so we'll be talking with them about that and exploring those options to come. But they've just done so much, and we're so grateful for everything they've done.
Are you concerned that what happened with this particular case, Giuliana versus the United States, are you concerned that those other cases you talked about that your organization has been a part of, are you concerned that what happened with Giuliana is just naturally going to happen to those other cases as well?
No, I'm not. And actually, your listeners may be aware of two cases that our Children's Trust, one on behalf of young people. One is the Held versus State of Montana case, also a constitutional climate rights case, and then the Nawahine versus Department of Transportation in Hawaii case that resulted in a really game-changing settlement agreement. So, youth won in Montana before the Montana State Supreme Court under state constitutional claims. So, even here in the United States, we're seeing these cases move forward to the merits. Another case that went up to the Utah Supreme Court that our Children's Trust leads is going back down to the lower court to amend the complaint there. But that court has also said there's a path forward for these young people. So increasingly, courts are going to recognize the fundamental rights to life and liberty and a climate system that sustains life for young people, and these cases will be heard. And it's important to remember that when constitutional law evolves, it takes time, and it takes the vigilance of litigators and plaintiffs to come forward and bring these essential questions to the court. And I like to remind people that the people who are bringing these stories to court shape the law. And so if you look at the campaign to overturn Roe versus Wade, that the conservative right waged, they waged that campaign for 50 years, case after case, policy after policy. Took a long time. And because of their perseverance, they actually won that battle, which for me is a catastrophe. But we need to bring these cases forward and move the Constitution in a direction that really protects the rights to life of children.
Let me reintroduce you to the audience. We're talking to Julia Olson. She is the chief legal counsel for Our Children's Trust. It's interesting because obviously, someone like myself, a non-legal expert, thinks of the law as kind of wins and losses. And I realize listening to you talk, that kind of sounds like that's not what this was about. And like you talked about, this is a perhaps a, and I want to hear it from you to kind of pull the thread a little bit more of what you're talking about, kind of foundational for the battles ahead.
So, Giuliana versus the United States absolutely laid the foundation for the battles ahead. And the law developed a lot during the course of that case. And importantly, we have seen the anti-democratic, anti-constitutional approach that the Trump administration really initiated in the Giuliana case, which was to use this rare tool called mandamus to stop litigants from getting to trial. And recall, in 2018, we were about a week away from starting trial, a 2-month-long trial here in Eugene, Oregon, against the US government. And because of these extraordinary measures that the Trump administration took, we couldn't present all that evidence at trial. And I think those efforts, they were novel to stop cases in this way, but the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court, they're going to be on to that measure now. And I don't think that's going to be the path forward where the Department of Justice can just stop cases out of hand. And what we're seeing now is with this new Trump administration is an effort to double down on fossil fuel energy and make it, we're already the dominant fossil fuel energy producer in the world, in the United States. We produce more oil and gas than any country in history. And the Trump administration wants that to continue going forward. So there is a need for these cases. We're in a time of threats to our democracy, but also increasing threats to our climate, when our current president is trying to block wind and solar energy, the EV transition. We have to hold our government accountable for everything they're doing right now.
I want to go back to the beginning, because I'm sure, and again, I'll say this again about myself, a non-legal expert. I mean, how daunting is it to sue the federal government, especially on something where, let's face it, I mean, so much of the government turns on power and energy, especially derived from fossil fuels. I mean, was this the longest of long shots, but still worth doing because it's so existential?
I tell everybody that the Giuliani case had the best facts of any case I've ever litigated as a lawyer. And I've been a lawyer for over 25 years. And every lawyer, every lawyer knows you win your case on the facts and the law. But if you have bad facts, you don't have a case. And this case has incredible facts, because we went to presidential libraries going back to President Eisenhower to show how the United States government knew that climate change was happening from burning fossil fuels, knew we needed to transition away from fossil fuels in order to protect human life and safety and well-being. And notwithstanding all of that information that was coming out of the White House since the time of Lyndon B. Johnson, they continue to promote this product that was unnecessary. And here's the key thing. Yes, our government has a valid interest in ensuring that we have energy to power our needs. You know, you need transportation to get around. People need to turn their lights on. We need our hospitals to function. So there's no question that energy is necessary to human life today. But the question is, what type of energy? And can we produce energy in a way that doesn't kill people and that doesn't cause the seas to rise and cause extreme weather events and cause the West to burn every summer? And the answer is yes. And so part of our cases bring forward the best technological and economic evidence through experts that show that this dirty way of producing energy, which is really old technology, is unnecessary today. I mean, wind and solar are the cheapest forms of energy that we can produce. Electric vehicles are amazing, and the technology there is just growing exponentially. But there's a portion, and it's not the majority, but it's a small portion of society that wants the status quo to be fossil fuels. And a very smaller portion that make a lot of money off of that. You know, these companies that our federal government and our state government support to produce fossil fuel energy they're making, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars off of people's lives. And it's just wholly unnecessary. And it's, you know, what's stunning is that we've all adapted to holding in our hand, in our phone, this technology that is, you know, as powerful as most of our computers. AI is expanding. Like, we have moved technologically to advancements that we couldn't even imagine 50 years ago. But we are still burning the same dirty fuel. And it is literally causing catastrophic harm to the planet. And importantly, it is hurting children's lungs today. It's hurting their bodies. And they're going to bear the burden of this crisis if we don't figure out how to just transition and use the technology that we have that is clean and safe.
Yeah. You talked about how sort of constitutional law evolves. And I wanted to ask you, how has our children's trust evolved, and where do you think you might evolve going forward?
We started as a brand new young organization, and we've evolved in a lot of ways. I mean, when we've grown, we're a staff of around 30 people, and we have staff working remotely across the country, and we have a global attorney who runs our global program. But the way we haven't changed, Michael, is we have always been really fueled and supported by individuals. who step up to donate and fund this work, and that has remained the same. We are largely funded by the generosity of individuals and small family foundations. That is the heart of our support. And I think, you know, where we're headed is we want to be litigating these constitutional rights cases on behalf of young people in half the U.S. states in the next 5 years, where we are working on this next federal case, as I indicated, and we will continue to work globally, supporting attorneys and young people who are calling on us to help them bring these types of cases around the world. So we will keep pushing the levers of constitutional rights on behalf of youth. And the United States is a big target because, again, we are the biggest problem. And then beyond that, we are really focused on trying to help the legal academy understand that children's rights need a special place in the law. And we're working with fabulous scholars, including Professor Catherine Smith, who's now at Washington and Lee in Virginia, as she develops more children's rights scholarship. And we're taking that and applying it to jurisprudence in the courts. Because here's the thing, and I learned this from amazing children's rights scholars. Our law and our legal system and our framework, it centers adults, not children. Hmm. And there are issues today that harm children more than anybody on the planet. And those issues include climate change, they include our gun violence epidemic, they include what's happening in education. Look at, you know, the Department of Education being destroyed right now. And also in our criminal justice system. So there's so many parts of society where our legal framework, by centering adults, is really doing damage, not just to these young developing people, but to the longevity of our communities and our democracy. Because if we aren't raising healthy, safe children who are supported, we're really going to suffer. And I think we're seeing that in many ways today. So we need to recenter how we look at our constitutions and how we look at law so that we're putting children at the center of it instead of on the periphery.
She's the chief legal counsel for Our Children's Trust. Julia Olson, always great to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, Michael.
Kendra Shertel is new to KLCC, and she'll be bringing her enthusiasm and expertise to cover the arts and culture scene in our community. Kendra Shertel, who is our new arts and culture reporter, thanks so much for coming in and talking to us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, welcome to KLCC. It's great to have you here. Why don't you, you know, tell the listeners sort of where you're from and how you got into this career?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm actually a transplant, so I'm from California.
Okay. We won't hold that against you.
Yeah, thank you. because I love it here. I love the rain and the forests. did not have that in California. Grew up in the desert.
Okay.
So, yeah, I got my undergrad here, though, from UO.
Okay.
And I did not study journalism. I went to Scotland to study journalism.
Really?
Yeah.
What was that like?
Oh, gosh. It was awesome. It was really great.
Yeah.
You know, I was so lucky to be able to have done that, and I recommend it to anyone who wants to.
Were you in Glasgow or Edinburgh?
Yeah, I was in Glasgow.
Okay.
Yeah, Media City.
Yeah, well, at least that got you prepped for the rain or something like that, because their weather's about as bad as ours.
Oh, gosh, yes, it's so much worse. Okay. You get like a week of sun.
Yeah. So talk about your studies abroad, but also just kind of how you kind of got interested in journalism.
I think it's always been my natural path to head down towards journalism.
Okay.
I studied theater. I love theater. And I always enjoyed making my own little stuff on the computer, editing. And arts and culture is just the natural path that I went down. It made sense.
Great. So why don't you give us kind of a snapshot of what you're going to be doing for us?
Yeah, my favorite part of arts and culture is being able to go out there and be part of the community. And so that's what I'm looking forward to doing, is just going out there, going to events, getting to know people. I love talking to people who are passionate about what they do. And that's the great thing about this position.
When you're talking to someone who's in sort of in that milieu of arts and culture, you know, what excites you about learning about their story?
I think it's just their passion. There's so many people who are passionate about what they do, and it's contagious. And it's really fun to watch people light up when they talk about what they love doing. And it could be in whatever, in any medium, anything.
You studied here. You know the area. Give us kind of your view of our arts and culture scene throughout our listening area.
There's so much to do, I think, that you don't even realize. There's so many amazing arts in the coastal area. The coastal area brings a lot of artistic people out. And there's always a festival somewhere in our area going on that we can always go to. So, and we have a lot of cultural things going on too. So it's just never ending. I mean, it's one of the great things about Oregon in general is how many things there are to do here.
Well, and I imagine it's going to be one of the challenges of your job is winnowing down what you're going to cover, because there is so much, and obviously it's a huge geographic area. Is that somewhat daunting in your of a task?
It's exciting, but it is also daunting, and I, you know, maybe I'll be a little bit biased towards the things that I enjoy doing, but there's a lot to choose from, so it's hard to narrow it down for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about sort of what you think audio coverage can bring to arts and culture. You know, the rich sounds that radio and the other forms that we're all about can bring to coverage. Because obviously, you know, it's interviews, but also it's capturing some of these unique sounds that are part of the arts and culture scene. Talk about that.
You're so right. I love audio. I love being able to edit and capture sound and create that a visual aspect through audio. I think that's a really freeing part of radio, is you can do a lot with it, actually. So capturing sound through, you know, what's going on around you, the crowds, the music, there's so many things to choose from, and I am excited about it. That's one of my favorite parts of radio.
Kendra Shertel, she is our new arts and culture reporter for KLCC. Thanks so much for coming in and talking with
us. Thanks for talking with me. It was so good to do this.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Tomorrow on the show, you'll hear from Tobias Reed, Oregon's Secretary of State, and hear what he and others are trying to do to stop the Trump administration from interfering in Oregon elections. I'm Michael Dunn, and this has been Oregon on the Record from KLCC. Thanks for listening.